The following podcast was previously recorded as a live stream broadcast. If you would like to tune in to a future episode of The Art of Bombing Live, please follow us on Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, or visit our website, artofbombingpod.com. Throwing spaghetti at the wall. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 228.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome
all right
to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Look who's back. It's Josh Shirley.
Dude, back from the road. It feels good to be home again. And looking at your pretty face, my friend.
Yeah, we were missing you last week. We did this last week, and you were actually coming to Denver, but we weren't able to get together.
Right. It was kind of an in and out trip, you know, just
happens.
Yeah, man, had to focus on the work thing for that. But you are number one on my list when I get back there, my friend.
Oh, that's good. I hope so. We'll have to grab a drink next time. Well, it's good to have you back. We're excited for today's episode. Today, we're joined by an ATL comedian. If you know what ATL stands for, if you don't, it's Atlanta. I'll just ruin it. I'm going to spoil it. It's Atlanta. an Atlanta-based comedian, Damon Sumner. We're excited to have them on the podcast. It's going to be great to talk to them. I took a weekend off. That's what I did last weekend. I didn't have what? No shows. I took it easy.
What did you do with yourself?
What did I do with myself? I just hung out with my partner. We had a nice date weekend. It was great. We went out for dinner Friday, and then we went out for drinks, and we watched people do karaoke. I might have done some karaoke. And then Saturday, we were both, because we're old and we had too much to drink the night before, and we stayed out too late. And when I say we had too much to drink, we didn't have a lot to drink. We're just old. and so we took Saturday and just recovered all day. We watched, we just caught up on shows all day. That's pretty much what we did. It's a pretty mellow weekend. And then great. Sunday we did some stuff around the house. But even that, it was still pretty mellow. So easy peasy weekend.
Good times. I did some gardening, man. And went on a date with my wife.
Ooh.
Wanted to add that last part in there.
Yeah, make sure. Yeah. Don't want to get in trouble.
That's right, man. We were home by 9:30. It was it's one of those things. After a certain point in the night, my debit card stops working, you know, because my bank's like,
it's like the pumpkin. It's like the pumpkin or the carriage turning back into the pumpkin.
That's right. There was a time in my life where I had to call the bank to tell them that I was going to Thailand, like to the other side of the world or whatever, because I didn't want them to think that somebody stole my card and was just running around with it, right? Yep. Now I have to call my bank, speak to someone on the other side of the world to tell them that I'm going to McDonald's.
So, like, hey. I'm still using my card. Yeah. Well, that's great. I don't know. Do you have any shows coming up?
I have a website that's going to launch in a few weeks. That's what I'm excited about.
Oh, nice.
I've been working with a graphic designer to get some of the final artwork together for logos and business like that. When I was in Austin, on the road down there, I got to hang out with my brother, who is a professional videographer, and I got some headshots done, which are going to be part of that whole thing. So I'm excited about getting that rolled out. I'll have more info on Art of Bombing site, more info for everybody once that's ready.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, I do. I have a couple shows coming up Thursday. I'm just going to a hockey game. First pro hockey game that I've ever been to. Pretty excited about that.
Right.
And then Friday, I will be in Spearfish. Sorry. My voice likes to do that when I want to record.
God.
It's fine all day until I have to record. And then it's like, hey, you know what's going to be cool? Making you not be able to talk.
Give me a host that's more alive. For show.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So I'm performing in Spearfish on Friday, and then Saturday I'm in Rapid City. We're performing at the Iron Phoenix, both in Spearfish and Rapid City, two different restaurants, but the same restaurant, just two different towns. So that's where you can find me this weekend. Before we get into this great episode, this great chat we're about to have, do have some business. Next month, we're celebrating the Art of Bombing 5-year anniversary, and I am pretty excited about that. A 5-year anniversary is huge. And when it comes to anything, really.
Yeah.
You know, but we're there. We're almost there. We have a great podcast lined up for our 5-year anniversary. The other thing I want to do is I put it out on our Facebook today, but I'm putting out a call of action. I want you all to go, if you've listened to this podcast for a while, and the podcast has helped you in some way, or, you know, tell us something great about how this podcast has helped you. That's what I'm asked for. That's what the That's what the call of action is going to be. I want you guys to go to podinbox.com/artofbombingpod and leave us a voice message and tell us how the Art of Bombing has helped you in the last 5 years, or tell us how much you enjoy listening to it and that you're excited that we've made it 5 years, or tell us what your favorite episode has been in the last 5 years. Any of those things, do that. Leave us a voice message. I know that when you get to the page, it says, hey, subscribe, pay money. Don't worry about that. You don't need to pay money to leave the message. Just scroll down, hit the microphone icon button, and leave your message. And then we're going to make, we'll probably make a trailer thing with those messages to play in the 5-year anniversary episode, which will be mid to late May. We're going to do that 5-year anniversary episode due to scheduling with the big guests that we have. So again, go to podinbox.com/artofbombingpod. Leave us a voice message and tell us. Yeah, just say something great, something that you've enjoyed about this podcast. And we would really appreciate that. I'm going to also put that in the comments, so it'll be there for you wherever you're watching this podcast. So make sure you go do that. So, and again, follow the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever you're getting it. Subscribe, do all the things, leave us a 5-star rating, review, all the business, leave it, do it. You know, I think that's enough business, don't you, Josh?
I do too, man. Let's get into this.
All right. Let's definitely get into this. We're going to do it right now. So without further ado, here is a clip of Damon.
And now it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
2020, though, man, we got to shut down certain sweets. That's just important. It's a new decade, new era. We got to let go of certain things, like fruitcake. We got to let that go. I don't know what we're doing. If you weren't born in the 1830s, what are you doing? I don't know what you're doing. We also got to let go of pumpkin pie in 2020. We got to shut that down. I know, demographically, I'm going to lose some of you, but listen to me. Don't look at me like that. I'm not even saying pumpkin pie's not tasty. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying we can't have two orange pies at the cookout. You know, that's all I'm saying. I get it. There's power in the pumpkin. You know what I'm saying? I see you. Pumpkin's a seasonal fruit for white women. I understand. I get it. I'm with you. You give a 36-year-old white woman a pumpkin latte, a scarf, and some wedges, she'll gentrify a neighborhood. I understand. I get how it works.
Oh, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
What's up? I'm great, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited.
I appreciate you having me on.
We're live. Yeah, I'm excited to have you on. I know it's been in the making for a while. Yeah, I know you reached out early in 2022, but it was just bad timing because I was moving. So I was kind of on hiatus, but I'm excited that we were able to work this out and excited to have you.
Yeah, man, I'm pumped to be here. I haven't seen that clip in a while. I was eating good at that time in my life.
Probably taking care of all the pumpkin pie, right?
smashing it.
Hell, heck yeah, I love it. Have you did any shows this week, or did you do any shows last weekend?
Yeah, I was actually in St. Louis this past weekend. I was fortunate enough to headline the side room at St. Louis's Helium Comedy Club.
Oh, awesome.
So I was there Friday night, Saturday night, first time there. Great hospitality, great crowd, just great weekend.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of those, I haven't been to a Helium Comedy Club, but I feel like a lot of them have like side rooms, right? Like they have a main room and then they have a smaller room.
Yeah, which is great for many reasons here. You know, I think they've got 6 or 7 clubs and they'll have whether it's upstairs or it's to the side, just a room, you know, for our thing, variety shows, mics, you know, other headliners at different levels, you know, just other opportunities for, you know, wait staff to earn money. So it's just, it's a great thing. And it was a dope time there going to Missouri.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. And the shows were all good?
Shows were good. It was the first time, probably ever, I checked a bag because it was my merch bag. And I was like, all right, come on, let's make this money back. Let's make this check bag fee work. And yeah, it was a lot of love out there in Missouri for me. So I appreciate that. And the bag was much lighter on the way home. So I'm grateful.
That's good. That's what you want to hear when you're working.
That's what you want.
That's the one of the worst parts about it's like that necessary evil, you know, having to do merch and things like that, especially when you have to fly. Because like you said, you have to check it. It's all that extra stuff you got to do. So it's always a good thing when people are buying it. So.
Yeah. And I definitely learned that'd be the last time I take that bag. That was a duffel bag.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, no, we're about to use that merch money to buy something with wheels. That's for sure.
Yep.
For sure.
Wheels are amazing. Suitcases with wheels, a must.
Mandatory.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, I was over here. You know, when something's heavy, you have to switch hands. You're like, all right, right hand. Then you go left hand. Then I was holding it up. I put it on my back. I was like, this is too much. This is too much.
Especially if it's a big airport or you have a long walk, you know, whatever all it right. is. Yeah, you definitely have to change
I had two
it
flights
up.
Of stairs at the comedy club. Oh. I'm coming down like I'm moving in. I'm like, who is this guy?
Either need luggage on wheels or you need to get a roadie to do a load in and load out.
That's what I need.
Right?
I need
Isn't, that's the mic. Dream? Having a crew? Yes. Get up there to where you're selling out those arenas and you have a whole crew of people doing all the heavy lifting.
Just you got a whole merch team. You got a whole merch team.
Yeah.
That's part of the journey though, man. It's part of the journey.
It absolutely is. Well, that's great that you had a good weekend in St. Louis. That's exciting. But that's not what we're going to talk about. We got to talk about the fun stuff that happens on the road and at gigs. You know, the fun stuff being those shows that don't go good, those horror stories, because they're always fun to talk about. So I would love to hear your story of a time that you felt like you bombed or had a bad show.
Yeah, for sure. So I start stand-up, just backdrop here. I don't know how much backstory you want, but just to set the framework, I start stand-up in 2010. And in 2012, my wife and I and my oldest son, who was 2.5 at the time, we moved to China. We moved to Shanghai, China. And so in Shanghai, China, I'm doing stand-up. I connect with a great group of comics there, Kung Fu Comedy, and things are great. Specifically, all right, we're probably about 9 months into our stay in Shanghai. And I've gotten a feel for what works in Shanghai. I've gotten a feel of the club, right, that's there. I know what's up now, okay? I'm comfortable, right? So the show, it's a Friday night show, 9 o'clock show. Everybody's cooking. The host cooks. The opener cooks. It's cooking, right? I'm the feature. And I'm doing maybe a half hour. And so long story short is I go up there for 15 minutes, Dan, and just murder. And I don't use that word just lightly, okay? it was a good time. You understand? it was just one of those nights where things are just clicking, just boom, boom, everything. They're laughing at the setup. They're laughing at riffs. They're laughing at tags. It's beautiful. For 15 minutes, blood and guts. And I think to myself, oh man, I should switch it up. I think to myself, things are going so well. Let's live on the edge. I think to myself, let's do all new, never before said, untested material for 15 more minutes.
Oh, and no. So,
I mean, they're at a spot where I'm like, oh, they're laughing at anything. Like, I could throw spaghetti at the wall and it'll crush. And so I threw spaghetti uncooked at the wall for 15 minutes. And I bombed so hard. It was night and day. It was like I was two different comics. It was a whole different beast. For 15 more straight minutes, nothing. Crickets, no laughs, premises, tags, riffs, crowd work. They turned on me respectfully in a flip of a dime. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
And I was so in my head. I was so like outer body. Like, I don't know if you ever had an outer body experience where you're looking at yourself like, dude, what bail? Like, go back to something you wrote before. But I don't know if it was pride, fear, you know, what it was. But I just continued to bomb for 15 more minutes. And here's the cherry on top. I you know, it's what have you done from lately? So when they say, yo, give it up for Damon Sumner, they give it up for the last 15 minutes. They don't remember the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
it was like golf claps. I was destroyed internally. No. Y'all make some noise for Damon Sumner. They were like, I guess. Is that the count? I go, it's the main floor where the club is, and then there's the upstairs, like a bar, bathroom, like pool hall, whatever. I go upstairs. I'm going to be honest. I've never told this story to anybody, really. I go upstairs. Listen to me. And I hide in the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
For about 10. I hide enough times where, a long enough time where I'm like, I think everybody's gone. I hide in a stall, right, where I'm just breathing. I'm drawing myself off. And I'm contemplating. I think this is it for me. I think that was a good run. I think I got to shut this whole dream chasing thing down. And I just sit in a stinky stall in Shanghai, China for like 10 to 15 minutes.
Wow.
And I'm just like, I wait till the crowd leaves. I come back. Everybody was like, I thought you left. Oh, no, I had to take a phone call, man. I had to handle some business. And I got my stuff and I went home. And that is one of the worst nights of comedy I ever had that started off so good.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because I suppose, you know, now you know as a comic, being, you know, doing it as long as you have, where you can feel comfortable enough doing new material, but knowing if it's not going well to switch back. But that, like, early in it, it's just like, oh man, I could just imagine how,
oh my goodness,
you know, you're feeling the crowd and you're just like, let's do it. Take that risk. They're on my side.
Yeah, I was just full, and it was probably more ignorance than ego, in my opinion, right? It was probably more, you know, at that time I probably had been doing it 2.5-3 years.
Yep.
I'm not a seasoned comic. I'm not a great comic at this moment. As a performer, as a writer, as an adapter on the fly, right? Like you just talked about, right? So it was like I was a deer in the headlights. By the time I had got like 3-4 minutes into it, I was like, I don't know how to get out. And I'm looking around and they're looking at me like, what did you do to us? Like, why did you betray us? I'm like, why did y'all betray me? And so everybody's offended. Everybody's frustrated. Everybody's annoyed. And it was just one of those times where, looking back, I didn't have a lot of tools on a tool belt and I just kind of had to live with it.
Wow. Yeah, that does sound horrible. And you know it's bad when a comic, like, it's one thing to have like a bad set or bomb or whatever, and you can easily, or not easily, but you still like pick yourself up and you'll go stand and at that recession
right.
line as people are leaving, and you say thank you for coming. But when it's really bad, you know it's really bad when you're hiding.
It was literally like I didn't even want. I didn't want the pity looks. I didn't want the pity claps. I didn't want the good try. I didn't want to, you'll get them next time. I didn't want any of that. I didn't want any of that. I thought you were funny. Oh man, tough crowd. I didn't want any of that.
Yeah. I don't blame you at all on that. That's crazy. Well, and then I know that, you know, in a lot of foreign countries, they do a lot of English speaking comedy, even though it's a foreign country. Was that the case here too, where it was like an English show?
Yeah. It was an English show. It was, you know, I was able to get with this group and they did such a fantastic job of cultivating shows. And it was, you know, and stop me when I go long winded, but I love talking about this, the craft. It was one of the best moments and time frames of my comedy career, because I was so challenged to write, especially at an early age, as a writer and as a performer, because the rooms were so diverse, right? Mm-hmm. Shanghai is so diverse. You've got Chinese natives, you've got American expats, you've got Australian students abroad, you got 10 people from Finland, you got 6 people from Brazil. You've got this diverse room, right? 85 strangers in this room, 12 different flags, 7 different national languages. And you're like, what's bringing us together, right? Because when I first got there, the American pop references weren't flying. So it really pushed me at a year early age to be like, okay, I've got to find those common threads, right? As a comic, as a performer, as a writer, that's going to bring this room full of strangers together. Mm-hmm. And so that was just a really, in hindsight, and even in the moment, I just was really grateful for that opportunity, because I think to this day, it really changed how I operated as a writer. When I think about personally for myself, wanting to be universal, have that universality of making anybody anywhere laugh.
Mm-hmm. And that's huge when it comes to comedy, and, you know, being able to do that, because you see it, you really see it in the U.S., like regional comedy or local comedy, where you'll have these comedians that they'll have killer sets and killer, you know, 10, 15 minutes or whatever, because they're using local references. But then, you know, they go try to do that same 10, 15 minutes in another city or another state, and then they just totally eat it. And that's, you know, it's because comedy has to be universal, and even more as a bigger scale when you're performing, you know, internationally, because you're right, there's like so many different, you know, different types of people that come from different walks of life and different experiences.
Yeah. It was, you know, if you're trying to kill with 30 minutes about the subway, brother, that better be the best 30 minutes that's relatable, that's got personal stories and woven in, or whatever the case may be, right? Like there's so much that goes into having your work, your act travel. And I think about, you know, so my favorite comedian of all time is Chris Rock. Who's yours, real tick off the top of your head? Who's your GOAT? Who's your favorite?
Oh man, I got probably John Mulaney. Off the top of my head, John Mulaney.
John Mulaney. Love him. And I bring up Chris because I remember listening, it was a podcast article, something, interview, where he said, you know, right when he was rising up, he wanted to be so good and have his act so tight that he wanted to be able to kill at the Apollo Theater and take that same act and kill at Carnegie Hall. And if you understand kind of what we're getting to here, when you talk about demographic types of people, et cetera, he's like, yo, I want to be so funny, it's undeniable anywhere I go. Yep. And I took that with me, still take that with me when I think about, you know what I'm saying, wanting to be the best comic, right, that I can be, right? And just being honest here, that time, it was just about a year, year and a half, something like that, being there. It definitely early opened my eyes to the notion that I think a lot of American comics specifically don't know, don't care about, don't realize. Oh, not only there's a lot of money to be made, but a lot of opportunity to go and travel and make people laugh around the globe. Mm-hmm. And so that has been a huge focus for me kind of in this last year and a half to, like, you know, in the midst of everything, trying to get in the right direction to get to.
Yeah. No, and I've seen that, you know, I see a lot of comedians that end up just moving over to like Europe because there's so many opportunities. You know, I have friends that live in Germany. I have friends that live in the UK. Like, And that's mm-hmm. all that you just go over there to do comedy. I've known people who've done comedy in China and at some mm-hmm. of the probably some of the same rooms you're talking about being over, you know. And so, yeah, there's definitely opportunity for it. And again, like I said, you just have to be able to be relatable to everybody, especially in those scenarios. And you said so that impacted you early on. Now when you write now to try to be, you know, because you're probably primarily performing in the U.S. right at the moment, you know, work because you just said you're working towards, you know, going back internationally. What, like, how do you kind of cultivate your material or you know, mold it so that it fits that whole broad audience?
Yeah, yeah. I think the biggest thing for myself is I talk about me. I talk about my life. I talk about my family, my upbringing. I talk about my stories, right? So already off top, the authenticity, the originality is there because it's me. That's one piece. But then I think, like, just in general, human, we have so many commonalities. We have so many things that are relatable, right? Whether you live in Canada or you live in Paraguay, like, there are things that still can relate to eating the right food, relationships. Like, now, don't get it twisted. I'm not necessarily giving you 8 minutes on spring season like Jim Gaffigan could do as a monster. But, like, I can, you know, relate how, you know, how I hate the summer because of sweat and I'm on the beach and I tell these stories about my kid almost getting bit by a shark, or I talk about just anything that I feel people can be like, oh yeah, either that's happened to me or I know exactly what you're saying. And so for myself, with my big picture in mind, right? And that's important for myself when you talk about cultivating and molding this. I kind of think about big picture. So for myself personally, I don't really write current events. I don't really write things that, you know, have a timestamp. I'm writing, if I've got a bit about me, you know, getting embarrassed in seventh grade PE, it's because this bit can go the test of time, you know what I'm saying, type of deal. And that's kind of, that's just kind of my mindset when I sit down in my Google Doc to start typing.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I feel like we probably write very similar because that's the same with me. I, you know, take life experience and try to put out there. Because the other nice thing about that too, because a lot of the stuff that happens to us individually, like you said, it's relatable to other people. But the nice thing about it too, while the words can be stolen, you can't steal the essence of a joke. You know what I mean? Like, if you're telling a story about your childhood, somebody, sure, they can come around long and repeat that, recite those words, but it ain't going to have the same cadence. It ain't going to have, you know, like I said, the same essence as when you tell that. They can't steal that material because it's too personal to you specifically.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, you know, it's really interesting. Some comics get really, which is their prerogative, really focus on, you know, how they don't post things online or when they're feeling like somebody's trying to, like, you know, bite their style or their bits, whatever. And that's just never been a thing I've worried about because of exactly what you're saying. Like, yeah, you could take my bit where a kid told me he would bite my penis off. You could, but, like, the energy and the zeal by which, because it happened to me, I'm going to tell it and how I'm going to tell it and be able to weave in and out, it ain't gonna do you much service, big dog. Yep. So, you know, just don't save your time and write your own stuff. So there is, I think, just a beauty in remembering for myself personally, like the human tendencies that we have. And I kind of just, I start big picture. I think from that, and then I go from there.
Yeah. Now, going back to the set you were talking about where you bombed, you know, because of the, you tried new material. Do you remember, like, the joke that you know, like, that the joke that you told where you started losing them? Like, I guess not specifically, but, like, was it something that might have offended them or something that, you know, would have made them just want to turn on you?
Yeah. So, no, I think what it was. So I was trying to, at that time where I was about 9 months there, I was trying to write more China-based, Shanghai-based jokes.
Okay.
And just in general, like, just, oh, taxi and trying to order food and, you know, being an expat. But it was then, it was fully untested. Maybe not even, I was so ignorant to this unpolished, untested material that I was like, yeah, I think I got a premise about getting lost in a taxi. Yeah, let's just go with that thought, literally, and see what we can do. It turned into soliloquies and monologues with no punchlines. And so I think that's, I remember that. Yeah, I definitely can't remember any specific jokes, but I can remember me wanting to go more local, more, you know, things that kind of fit that room, more subway jokes, if you will.
Yeah.
And they were just so untested. They were so unpolished. I didn't know where I was going. You know, when you're doing, there's this balance of when you're doing a new bit, right? New chunk. And there's this exciting angst, right? Where it's like, ooh, I'm trying to work this out. I'm trying to dig for the gold. But also it's messy, right? The premise is here. And the punchline's not exactly where you want it. Is the laugh coming, right? It was that for just 15 roller coaster minutes. And I just.
And not even probably the same bit. It was all kinds of ideas.
All over the place.
A lot of premises, no punchlines.
No punchlines for 15 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's crazy. And I just always wonder that because sometimes, you know, when you're doing well, like you said, even you say just like the wrong thing, especially here lately with like politics and stuff. It's so easy to lose an audience, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't mean like offend or upset. I mean lose. Sure. Where they're just like, yeah. Oh, we don't agree on politics. I'm not going to listen to you no more. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that bit you showed. I remember the first times I did that pumpkin pie bit. And, you know, it's a very playful bit. But, you know, going back to Mike Birbiglia's special, Thank God for Jokes. Have you ever seen that one? Where he has like this rant, not rant. He has like this little moment where he's quiet as he does. And he just talks about like more than likely somebody's going to get offended by any joke. Yep. Literally as silly as a silly old pumpkin pie joke. Right. And so I remember the first few times I did it, I won't use the word lose them, but like I remember it being especially the first two times where I'm like, where's the punchline and where am I going?
Yep.
Right? It was like, all right, I'm going to step on a lot of people's toes in a 60-seater room right here, even on a playful level. But I need you to stay with me because I've got some gold at the end I think we can have a good time with. And so I do remember that bit getting worked out, where it's like, all right, stay with me, where I think. In the bit, I have this tag. I know I'm going to lose some people demographically or whatever I say. That got added because I was anticipating, you know, the room being like, what do you mean? Pumpkin pie is made from God's hands.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's amazing. Now, going back to, you know, bombing and stuff and jokes not working, when you tell a joke and it does bomb, what starts to go or you start to feel like you're maybe losing an audience? What goes through your mind?
That's a great question. Two things usually go through my mind. One, sit in it, you know, being comfortable with silence, depending on how long the set is, right? So if it's a shorter set, let's keep it pushing. So the first one is kind of sit in it. Right. See if I can see if I could check out the body language or kind of just the feel of the room. And the second one is to acknowledge it and just like, you know, just put a pin in that balloon and let it deflate. And that usually kind of gets thanks. I thought we were the only one feeling that bomb happen right there. And I keep it moving. And, you know, my pacing comparatively is, you know, quicker than some. So like, these jokes are coming. So if a joke doesn't hit, you only got like a second or two tops before another one's coming your way. So there's not even a ton of time just in my routine and in my rhythm that kind of it kind of sit long. So if I do sit in that silence, it's very intentional. Otherwise, like, oh man, that wasn't it. Oh, wait, he's already moved on to dogs. Boom. Here we go. And we're going.
Yep. Just gotta keep them moving, keep them moving,
keep it moving.
What do you do to excuse me? What do you do to analyze your sets? You know, as far as like if you have, especially if you're working on a new joke and you're talking about you put it out there and you're not quite sure where the punchline should be yet. How do you, you know, analyze that so that you can mold it to get it to where it needs to be?
I just have to say, just for a second, caveat here. So I've been on like 20 podcasts, give or take, since January. And I have thoroughly enjoyed talking about comedy. That question alone gets me excited because I love talking about like systems and habits. And that's for the comedy nerds out here.
Yeah.
So I do a couple things. One, I record every set audio-wise. And I have three emojis to quickly showcase to me. Let me see if I can show. I don't even know. It might be a waste of time, but I show if you can see that even remotely. So there's three emojis. There's the praise hands. There's the praise hands, yep, which means the set was great. There's the flex, which means the set was fine. It was a good set. And then thankfully, there's no okay sounds, which means we got out of there alive. So it's been a good 2 weeks.
I think you are the first comedian that has rated their sets via emojis. So
yeah.
Well done. In the 5 years I've been doing this, I've had people say they'll like put ratings on them and, and you know, maybe stars or whatever.
Sure.
But I first one to use emojis, and I love it.
I did that because I started working cruises, which, you know, we could talk about that if we want to another time. But so anyway, to get back to, I start with the good. Maybe some people do the complete opposite. I want to start with what went well. So I'm looking first for praise hands. Probably on the weekends, I'll sit and listen to like 2 to 4 sets. And also kind of on there, I put beside the emoji, what new stuff it was in that set. So I can go right to, like, right now I'm working on a chat rooms, right? A lot of people can relate to old school chat rooms. Bit is messy. It's all over the place, but I'm having fun with it. So anytime I work that bit, I put chat rooms, right? Emoji, chat rooms, emoji, chat rooms, emoji. So I can go and just listen to, oh, did I add a tag? Oh, that little chunk is just fat. Let's get rid of that, right? So as I'm listening to that specific bit on different sets in different rooms on different nights, I'm trying to pick up on the rhythms in that right there. And last but not least, I am a sit down writer. You know, writing on stage for me is just me having some impromptu and a little bit of tags here and there, but I sit down and write on a Google Doc on writing, mm-hmm, sense, and then on the revision sense as well. So that's a little bit of kind of how I go about the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it is a process, always a process. I'd be interested, you know, because you said you've been working cruise lines and stuff too. How do, like, when you listen back to your sets, what's some of the bigger differences you find from listening to a set on a cruise ship versus a comedy club?
Well, the biggest difference for me right now in my stage of career is just the size of the rooms. So my pacing is a good bit of difference on the ships, because the ships are sitting, you know, I worked before the pandemic popped off. I was full time, thankfully and graciously, for 2 years. And I was working with Carnival, and Carnival did a great job of having an actual comedy club on board. Hey, we're going to this room to laugh. Lights are low. There's a host. It's set up, right? Well, and so, but you got 300 to 500 people in this room. Whereas, you know, in the cities, right, you're kind of doing anywhere between, depending on who's there, 2 people, to who, you know, maybe, you know, the Laughing Skull, one of the best clubs in Atlanta, it seats 80, right? So you're there, right? So having those laughs echo and go from the back of the room of a 450-seater, come back, you know, it helps me play with pacing. It helps me play in the silence. And so that's just the first thing that comes to mind to answer your question, where it's just a clear indicator. It's like, oh, that was a 22-seater dive bar. That was a 500-seater room, right, in the middle of nowhere, where I got through half the jokes because the pacing was so different.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the timing can get thrown off if you're getting good applause breaks and you know, laugh breaks and things like that. It's amazing, mm-hmm, when you're having a good set how much time laughs and applause breaks can eat of your time.
Then it's completely true and completely could be the opposite.
Oh, absolutely. I always say when you're bombing, it feels like an eternity. Even if you're bombing for 3 minutes, that 3 minutes feels like it's an eternity.
Oh, my God. I was expecting laughs here, here, and here. And now.
Now I'm just waiting for that clock to run out so
please,
I can go hide in a bathroom stall.
That's it. We're my ladies, right? You start going to those ad libs. Who's new in town?
Yeah, right. Yeah. If you know any local references, you start going for the local references.
Johnson Street, am I right? Yeah. Ooh, busy.
How about that stoplight? What's that about?
Where my singles at? Singles in the building, make some noise.
Oh man, you could go through like almost every stand-up comedy trope when you can tell that a comedian's struggling or doesn't have other material. And that comes with experience. That's like one of the biggest things is that, you know, with newer comics, you don't have the material yet. And so it becomes, you know, that situation where if you're bombing, you're just like, well, you can't throw an audible and change things up.
Yeah, you look at the tables. What y'all eating? What y'all drinking over there? Ooh, cheesecake.
Can I have one of them chicken fingers?
y'all want to test me to drink it? Y'all don't think I'll drink his drink? You're doing competitions and contests on stage now. What is? What?
Oh man, it's sad. We're laughing at this, but these are all things that. I have almost seen all of these things happen.
Yes, indeed. And if I'm honest, I've done a few.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I'm sure we all have. We've all been to that stage. You said it earlier where at that point in your career, you just didn't have the experience or whatever. And that's true for all of us. You know, when you're, you know, I look back now in my first year, and we started comedy the same year. So I look back at my comedy in my first year, and in my first year, I thought I was like amazing. And now I look back at it and I see some of the material I wrote, and I'm like, oh, I was terrible. It's like, how was I ever that bad?
How? Y'all kept booking me.
So terrible. Yeah. I was so terrible. How am I still doing comedy? Somebody should have stopped me.
Yeah. I only remember a handful of bits from like my first 2 years, and they all just be like, bruh, that was what? Yeah. What?
Yeah. That's one thing. So my first set was recorded, and I have it on YouTube, but I have it unlisted. But every year of my anniversary, I like to go watch it. Because it's a good reminder of how I've progressed over the years. Yeah. Like every year that I watch it, I'm like, oh, I'm so much better now. And so it's good to have like evidence that you are progressing. So you're not just, you know, stagnant.
Yeah, that's very true. I think I've got it somewhere as well. And I haven't seen it. But if and when I do, it is a humbled person who's watching that for sure.
Now, I'd like to talk about the bumming of bombing, which is the dreadful feeling you get when you bomb, and how long that typically lasts, and how it's changed over the years for you.
Sure. I mean, bombs probably for the first, it'll be 12 years in October, right? And I mean, if I'm honest, the first probably half of my career, just emotional eating and just night done. Just maybe even the first hour to have worked the next day, right? Now, just being honest, it might make it to the car.
Yeah.
I might get there, get a couple respectful fist bumps, you know, listen to a comic and get on out of there, whatever the case may be. But by the time I get in the car and drive, listen to a song or get to the house, it's nowhere to be found. And that's just where I am personally, I think professionally. Don't get it twisted. The bombs are going to keep happening, but how it affects me, how it impacts me has changed mightily.
Yep. And I feel like that's with most comedians. The longer you do it, the less you know, the bombs affect you. I mean, you still happen, like you said, but they don't have that as big of an impact. Because I remember early on, if I bombed at an open mic, I would feel like crap until I did good again. And now it's like, if I bomb at an open mic, I don't care. Even if I bomb at a regular show, I'm like, whatever. The ones that, you know, when I'm getting paid for a gig, that's when I'm like, oh, especially corporates, even though I know most corporates aren't going to go very well anyway. But I still feel, I'm just like, oh, man, yeah, why did yeah. you so bad? You know, that kind of thing. Yes, yes. Those are the
they
ones
gave
me
a comma. They gave me two zeros.
And I couldn't even make the whole room laugh.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah, that's, no, that's very true. It's very true. The impact, it changed a lot. And even how I see bombing, like mm-hmm. just the perspective, like you know, when I bomb, it's probably because I'm trying a good bit of new material that's untested and unpolished. Can I bomb? Of course, with my A-list stuff, sure. But primarily, if I'm being honest right now, it's probably because I'm doing some type of shorter set or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, all right, they seem like a fun crowd. Let's get out here and open. Let's open with a new bit, which is something I heard from Nate Bargatze a couple years ago in an interview. He was like, yeah, you know, I'll open with a new bit. One, two, just to kind of have that edge and that excitement. But two, which I can't speak for you, but I know I've done so many times. It's like the sandwich, right? I'll start, get them on my side with a classic bit. Then weave in the new and then finish with something well.
Yep.
Sometimes you cook and you're like, I just want to keep cooking. Why would I sabotage this great night? And you don't do the new stuff. So he's like, oh no, I put it at the top. So I have to do the new stuff and then I can work out of it. So anyway, that was a long way of answering. Perspective also has changed on bombing.
Yeah. But no, that's really interesting, an interesting way of thinking about that, just having to do it at the top, so you have to work your way out. It's like you dig the hole and then this is either going to work or I'm going to have to dig my way out, but by golly, I'm going to work and get there.
You know, and it's such a, especially when you kind of move up in the ranks a little bit professionally and in your city, you want to do well for many reasons, and one reason is for the crowd, one reason is for your peers, one reason is for yourself, right? All these things. But in my opinion, like, I want to keep building, like, you know, I this hour's out now and all right, well, I got to start working on the new stuff. So I got to be brave, like I was in year one, in year three, in year six, to work the new stuff, to be ready for the bomb, right? Et cetera, et cetera. So it's a part of the journey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this has been great. I still have a few things I like to do towards the end, but real quick, I just want to, for the people watching, thank you guys so much for tuning in tonight. Really appreciate you having you guys here. I know some of you have been commenting. We're going to get to them here in a little bit, but we will be doing, after I do the next few questions, we're going to open it up for a Q&A. I know some people already put some questions in the comment section, which is great. If you have any questions that you would like to talk about or like to ask, this is the time to put them in the comments, and after we do these next few questions, we'll bring Josh back in and we'll do the Q&A. So get your questions in. That was my long-winded way of saying get your questions in. Now, going back to, like I said, I like to do some fun stuff at the end. So one of the things I like to do, we have the Art of Bombing playlist, which is the Get Pumped. Doesn't have to get you pumped for comedy, just a song that gets you pumped for whatever. Do you have a song that you would like to add to that playlist?
That's good. The first thing that comes to my mind is Right Above It. That's Lil Wayne and Drake. Right Above It
Got
by
it.
Lil Wayne and Drake. That's a song I probably listen to. It's also the theme song of a TV show, Ballers, with Dwayne Johnson on HBO.
Okay.
I probably listen to it probably before every single show.
Oh, so it does get you pumped for comedy.
Yeah, too. Yeah, yeah.
I love it. That's even better. If it gets you pumped for comedy, even better.
Yeah.
And then, again, we talk about those horror shows, the horror stories of comedy, which is fun. We get a laugh. You know, you can go back and laugh at it now. It's not so great in the moment, but I like to end on a more positive note, and I like to talk about one of your favorite gigs that you've done or one of your best gigs.
I think so many. I think one of my favorite ones, which had a lot of positive business dividends, I did Laugh Your Asheville Off Comedy Festival 2015, 2016. And it was my first theater show. And they taped it, and it was a great crowd. It was a great night. Maybe my second festival, Made my first one out of town. So just everything was great. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, that tape literally got me so much work, so many festivals, that like that hot streak was crazy. It was like a 4-year streak of just using that 5-minute tape that got me so much. So I just remember that awesome. Night, theater, HD cam, the crowd was hot. And then on top of that, the back end work that came.
That's awesome. That's a great story. Oh, I love it. Especially, I love it when it pays off so well, you know what I mean? Like where you go do the festival, you get a good tape, you get to use it for other stuff. That's that's what comedy's about, right?
That's what it's supposed to be.
All right. Now, the last thing I like to do, we're going to play a game called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20, and I'm going to ask you a corresponding question that may or may not be about comedy.
Sweet. 11.
11 it is. What is the dumbest way you've been injured?
The dumbest way I have been injured. I took 2 years off of playing high school football. I fell in love with Little Debbie, Betty Crocker, and Sarah Lee, white women of choice. And I came back to play, and I pulled my groin first day of practice. Had to walk 30 minutes home, ride a city bus. And it was just so, I felt so dumb to be like, wait, you took 2 years off, 8-pound cake, thought you were going to run full speed with no stretching? Yeah, you deserve this, big dog.
It's like a karma from the universe right away.
Yeah, settle down. Once you get into sports journalism.
Yeah, right. Love it. All right. Well, Josh, why don't you join us? I see we got a lot of questions coming in, so that's great.
Damon, it's been a great time talking to you, man. Just wanted to say how much I appreciate hearing all the stories and everything. I think a good segue, our first question was one that I'll read out to you. You talked about in your bombing story that you had this experience where you decided to pivot just in the middle of the act, like straight onto new stuff. And you've talked about writing and you've talked about different strategies for how a comic can put in new stuff. But what's your way of doing that? When you have new material, the question that came in was, what's your process for putting new material into the act?
Yeah. So when I don't try to be Nate Bargatze, it is a hot code, right? Good week. So the process for me is I get them on my side, start with a bit that's strong and, you know, quote unquote polished. Then I go into the new bit, right? And then if that goes well, I've got another polished bit on the back end. If it doesn't go well, I've got another polished bit on the back end.
Yeah.
And so, you know, from especially like shows, like mics are the gym, right? So that's just where you go put up shots. But when you're doing shows, in my opinion, that's where you're trying to weave it in and see what's working. Because for myself personally, I find much more benefit of doing new stuff, not at mics, but at shows. They paid money. They got a babysitter. They paid for parking. They got on a good shirt. Right. And so they're invested into the show. So I can get a real test of this material on this quality show. So that's the kind of process that I go with.
Yep. Awesome. I agree with that on the fact, you know, when you can do a new joke in front of a crowd, you're going to get a better idea of whether that not that joke has potential or where it needs the work. You know, like, sure, you can go to an open mic and do new material. That's what they're for. But if you're just there with a bunch of comics, you're not going to get you're not going to get the same gauge.
Yeah.
Next up was I'm going to turn a comment that we got into a question. Mm. So this is something we got from the Art of Bombing Pod Facebook group. I appreciate one joke getting no laughs because it makes the laughs that I assume you do get more valid. And I just I wanted to get you guys' take. I have my take on that. I just wanted to hear what you guys thought about that comment.
Well, real quick, I do want to do a shout out to Jacob Lee Downey. I think that's who made the comment in the Facebook group. So thank you for watching. I think a lot of the anonymous Facebook user is Jacob. So thank you real quick. So thanks for watching. As far as that goes for me, I mean, I don't know. I feel like every punchline should be getting some laughs. You know what I mean? Like I'm not trying to, unless the joke is so shocking that I'm hoping that I get a oh or a ooh or something. I want the laugh. I'm not trying to get a joke with no laughs.
I 100% agree. I don't want. My goal is to have that room rocking from top to bottom, beginning to end. For me personally, I appreciate one joke getting no laughs because it makes the laughs feel more valid. I respect that. That is not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
I want every joke to have the laughs. But that's just my thought process and the way that I want my rhythm to go.
Yep, I agree with you guys. I'm the same way. If I'm going back and I'm listening to my set and I have one joke that didn't get a laugh, I'm probably focused more on that joke than the rest of what happened that night. But I think the poster is just trying to say, look, you know, I mean, if they don't laugh at one joke, it means that they're listening to everything. Sure. And I think there's some credence in that, which I think is cool.
And sometimes you do get that where the crowd – they're not laughing, but they're paying attention, you know.
Yeah,
they're just being attentive. And, you know, they don't know that they're supposed to laugh. They're just like, I'm just being polite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah. Smilers don't do anything for me. Like, and you'll have those shows where nobody laughs. And then afterwards, you're like, oh, it was so great.
Thank you. My goodness.
Well,
please.
You know what? If they can smile at me all they want, as long as they're not sitting there like this.
Yeah,
that's what I don't want to see. There's always that one guy that sitting always like this, and then it just gets my attention, and I'm like, oh,
oh my god! I was in the world a few weeks ago, and I had a lady come tell me ahead of time that she wasn't going to laugh at anything, and then sat and didn't.
Oh, she won. Gosh, that's like even worse. Like
it was bad, dude. There's more to the story, but we got to move on.
All right.
All right, got a lot of questions tonight, so we need to lightning round these last few here.
Perfect.
So, good question here. Do you use notes on stage?
I do not.
I don't either. I don't use. I just try to because I recorded audio. I just want to speak from the heart, if you will, and then I'll go back and listen to it from there. But I don't use notes.
Yep, I don't even bring a set list with me.
Ooh,
yeah. I write the set list out in my notebook.
Yeah.
And I'll study it for the night, I'm doing that night, and then I leave it. I don't take it with me.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you. I don't have it up there as well.
Right. Yeah, maybe early on for me, I'll have it in when I'm developing something brand new. I'll pace through a few notes at a mic or something, but never.
Well, we wanted to do a lightning round on this, but I just want to add this real quick. So when I first started doing comedy, I never used notes. I just was totally script rehearsed it and recited it, which wasn't always good either. Then I moved up to California. I saw a bunch of people using notes. I started using notes on stage because I thought, oh, it's fine. And then another veteran comic pointed out to me, he said, every time you look down at your notes, you're losing your connection with your audience because you're breaking your eye contact. And so you're creating a disconnect. And then I started watching tapes back and I saw what he was talking about. You're like, every time you look down at your notes, there's a chance that you're going to lose your audit, that connection that you've built, you know? So that's why for me, I don't do it.
Mm. Right.
It became a crutch.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And distracting.
All right. Did you make the tape yourself? I'm going to kind of go out on a limb here and guess that we mentioned earlier on that Damon had an album coming out, or maybe he's heard that from somewhere, maybe wants to know if...
I think he's talking about the tape he got from the festival.
Mm. All right.
Because that popped up while we were talking about it.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, it could be got it, but...
no, I didn't make it myself, to answer the question here. The festival was dope enough to give us all, you know, high quality video, and I used it till the wheels fell off.
Yeah. And well, we were going to talk about your album here in a little bit, but why not? Let's just talk about it right now and then we'll hit up a few more questions.
Sure.
All right. How do you find booked spots? Where are the booked spots, guys? Where are they at?
They're hidden behind Gatekeeper. Oh, wait. No, that's not right. No. Really, you just have to find wherever your local scene is, wherever you're based out of. There's probably a Facebook group for one. Mm-hmm. The best way is to go to open mics. If you're new, go to open mics and meet other comics, start networking within your scene. Otherwise, you know, depending on the shows, bookers, it's so hard because, you know, comedy clubs will like change bookers. So like, and a lot of these comedy clubs, it's a mystery who, like, in order to figure it out, you have to like solve the mystery. And then if you can impress the booker after you solve the mystery of who the booker is, you get, it's like, they're like Kaiser Soze.
Yeah. It's, depending on where you are in your career. Like if you're new, going to mics, meeting comics, that's how you really get into it. Like you said, Facebook groups, whatever. Just kind of being around, you'll kind of see and get a feel for things. So like be present, be out there, be in the streets, man. And it'll come with time for sure.
Yep. And be nice. That's very important with that. Right. Like you can be out there, but if you're being a jerk to everybody, that's the quickest way to get like shunned.
Easy.
Just be nice and be kind.
Beat
to everybody. Even if they're douchey to you, just be nice because you know, you don't have to associate with them people, but just don't be a jerk. Just be nice.
Last caveat. When you feel like you're ready, and that's a relative word, you know, find another comic or two and then start your own show. That's another great way to, one, get more stage time, grow as a host, grow as a producer, et cetera, and connect. Because then people are like, hey, can I get on your show? And then more connections, more networking will happen too.
Absolutely.
Do it when you're ready.
Yep. And especially if you're in a smaller community, like if you don't have a big comedy scene, creating that stage time is super important because it's going to be one of the only ways you can get stage time. You know, that's for me. Yeah. I started in a small town. I had to start creating my own opportunities.
Exactly.
Yep. Exact same thing here. I was going to say those exact words. I think that's a perfect way to end this, guys. Just being able to say, hey, what can I give back as a comedian, I think is really valuable, particularly when you're starting out, is a time to not just look at what I can get from my scene, but what I can give back to it.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much for joining us. For the people watching, thank you. I know there was a ton of questions, and we probably didn't get to every comment, but seriously, we thank you guys for tuning in. Before we get out of here, though, we do want to let Damon talk about, he has an album that just came out, got a special, so I want to hear about that. Tell the people where they can find that, where they can follow you if they want to know more about you and start supporting you and your comedy journey.
Yeah, appreciate it, team. This has been dope, Josh, Dan. I appreciate you having me on, man, for sure. So questions were great. This has been a good time. So the album came out a month ago. I Know Who I Am. That's the name of the album. And it's been dope to kind of do it. I did it with Helium Comedy Label. And so that was great. And you can get it anywhere, right? It's streaming everywhere from Sirius, Pandora, Spotify, Apple, et cetera, Google. It's all over the place. You know, if you're feeling froggy enough to buy it, I'd appreciate it. The other way, just stream it. Stream it when you sleep. Tell your granny to stream it and all that jazz. But connect with me over on Instagram or TikTok. I'm on both of them. You know what I'm saying? I'm in these streets. Damon Jr. 2, D-A-M-O-N-J-R, the number 2. Damon Jr. 2, that's TikTok, that's Instagram. And let's connect because I'm going to be starting, I'm going to be in Denver in June. I'm going to be touring through the summer into the fall. So I'm going to be trying to get out into these cities, man.
Awesome. And then you have a couple of podcasts yourself. You want to mention them real quick?
Yeah, sure. So I've got two podcasts. I do one, it's called Fourth and Tens with two other comics. We talk sports-ish topics, right? So you're not going to get three comics talking like analytics and of hard stats. You will get us talking about the fact that Kevin Durant said he wanted to drink Scarlett Johansson's bathwater. Good fun. And so that's one. We do that. That drops every Wednesday. And then I have one with my wife. We talk relationships, man. We get into it. And that's called Summit Up with the Sumners. And that's been going for about a year. And that drops every Tuesday. And yeah, those are the two podcasts. We are here trying to create content, man.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been fantastic. Make sure, if you're watching, make sure you go follow Damon on all social media. Go get his album. Download it. Buy it. That's the, you know, it's the best way to support an independent artist or comedian. It, you know, sure, you can stream it, and they might get pennies on the dollar, but the best way, if you really want to support an artist, go to their website and buy the stuff directly from them. Because that's where they're going to make the most out of it. So go buy the album. It's great.
Repeat. Yeah, definitely. Definitely a good idea. I do research on every comic that we bring up when I don't know the comic already. And for in Damon's case, I checked them out. I can't wait to get my hands on the album. It's just the stuff I've seen has been great.
Yeah, going to be fantastic. Thank you all for tuning in. We do have a couple of quick things. Again, at the beginning of the show, I talked about the call to action. We're going to be celebrating our five-year anniversary. We have a pretty good guest. It will not be a live recording. I do want to mention that. It's an in-studio recording, so not going to be live broadcasted, but it's a great guest. You guys are going to you're going to be excited when you find out who the guest is, but I'm not saying any names yet until I have the interview locked and loaded in my recording device, because if I say it, something can happen and then it doesn't happen. So I don't want to jinx myself. So but anyway, yeah, so we got that coming up. So again, if you want to say something or, you know, wish us happy anniversary, whatever, like, you know, maybe you want to throw in a quick bombing antidote or ask questions or whatever it is, that's what the voice inbox is for. All you got to do is go to podinbox.com/artofbombingpod, leave the voice message. Again, scroll down past the subscription stuff. You don't have to pay us money to do this. It's a free service. That's just something they make you set up. Don't worry about it. Go record your message. If you do want to support us financially, you can join our patreon.com/artofbombingpod. We are working on, it's been dead over there, if we're being honest, but we're working on getting some content and some, you know, kind of rebranding that. So if you want to get in on that early, now's the time to go head over to patreon.com/artofbombingpod. But the best way that you can support this podcast is by subscribing wherever you're listening, following all the social media. Hit us up on Instagram. Hit us up on Facebook. Hit us up on Twitter. We're on TikTok. We're on all of them. Art of Bombing Pod. Follow our social media. Tell your other comedian friends that, hey, there's this awesome podcast where they go and talk about bombing and what they learn from it so they get better. And then you can listen to it and get better at comedy, because that's what this is about. This is probably the only podcast that goes this in-depth on bombing. It's the original podcast. If there are others doing it now, this is the OG where we get in-depth on the bombing and what we can learn from it to become better comedians. So tell a friend. And then another great thing that you can do for us is go wherever you're listening to the podcast, leave that 5-star rating, leave a nice review. That helps us beat the algorithm, so other people will discover this podcast in those podcast feeds. You got anything to add, Josh?
Just how important that 5-star rating is. You know, it's not 2, not 3, not 4. 5.
5.
It's what we need.
Yep, 5. 5. And nice words. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Art of Bombing Podcast. I am your host, Dan Bublitz Jr. And
with him, as always, is Josh Shirley.
See how producer. I threw you under the bus there.
It's a no-look pass, but I was ready for it.
I know. That's good. That's good. You made it look like you weren't, but there we go. All right. Thank you guys all for tuning in, and have a good rest of your night.
This has been brought to you by Dead & Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
Are we actually leaving or just ending?